I wanted to not gloss by the watershed moment at the burning bush, because that is a really important act of intimacy that God offers and graces Moses to. And that moment of revealing just a little bit more of who he is. When you think about the intimacy that you experience when you're reading the Bible or learning the Bible, and you feel that closeness with God, that intimacy when he just shows you another tiny piece of who he is. Of course, he had an extra special relationship with Moses, but that moment where he's at the bush and he gives him the name, it foreshadows the very special relationship this nation is about to have.
Hi there, and thanks again for joining us on Study with Friends. We are currently tracing God's covenantal promises of land, descendants, and relationship through the whole of the Old Testament. In our current series, we're following these themes throughout the Pentateuch and how they apply to us as believers today. If you've missed the first two parts of this or would like to get the homework, head to our website, studywithfriends.org, and search Pentateuch. Feel free to listen to us on your favorite streaming app or check us out on YouTube. Let's begin.
So let's go ahead. It's crazy. We've been talking about the covenants for a long time, and we haven't read any of them yet. So go ahead and, Carol, if you would read the Noahic covenant, and it's found in Genesis 9, 1 to 17. Would you read that to us?
Sure. And God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. The fear of you and the dread of you shall be upon every beast in the earth and upon every bird of the heavens, upon everything that creeps on the ground and all the fish of the sea. Into your hand they are delivered. Every moving thing that lives shall be food for you. And as I gave you the green plants, I give you everything. But you shall not eat flesh with its life, that is, its blood. And for your lifeblood, I will require a reckoning. From every beast, I will require it, and from man. From his fellow man, I will require a reckoning for the life of man. Whoever sheds the blood of man, by man shall his blood be shed. For God made man in his own image. And you be fruitful and multiply, increase greatly on the earth and multiply in it." Then God said to Noah and his sons with him, "Behold, I establish my covenant with you and your offspring after you, and with every living creature that is with you, the birds, the livestock, and every beast of the earth with you, as many as came out of the ark. It is for every beast of the earth. I establish my covenant with you that never again shall all flesh be cut off by the waters of the flood, and never again shall there be a flood to destroy the earth." And God said, "This is the sign of the covenant that I make between me and you and every living creature that is with you for all generations. I have set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be a sign of the covenant between me and the earth. When I bring clouds over the earth and the bow is seen in the clouds, I will remember my covenant that is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh. The water shall never again become a flood to destroy all flesh. When the bow is in the clouds, I will see it and remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is on the earth." God said to Noah, "This is the sign of the covenant that I have established between me and all flesh that is on the earth."
Thank you. That was a lot.
It's a lot.
There's a lot in there. Mm-hmm. A lot about animals.
Flesh.
Yep.
On the earth.
And again, all of these things like could be a study in and of themselves. But I want you to lift out land, descendants, and relationship. Please. And thank you.
Okay. Well, he's talking about, "I will never destroy the land with a flood." So he'll preserve land for us. Many times he says, you and your offspring.
Good.
And specifically, I think just him always saying, I will remember this covenant. Mm-hmm. I have this relationship with you and I am going to live this out. I'm going to be faithful to this.
Good. Thank you. You just totally nailed it. Mm-hmm. Anything else you guys want to add to that?
As part of the land, God gave humans dominion over the animals. Mm-hmm. which also was done in Genesis with Adam.
Mm-hmm.
As far as descendants in this passage, he does tell them to be fruitful and multiply.
Yep.
Again, that was told to Adam.
Reiterative, yes.
And then God made man in his image, and he includes in here, in there, that's something for me to remember. You know, we're all made in God's image, and that from that, I really, it follows the sanctity of life, because we're made in God's image, and he addresses all that with blood for blood, and how important that is, and that the life is in the blood.
Oh my gosh, nailed it. See why we love Marilyn.
I thought that was a little bit odd. Like, why is that in there? That part about
she stole your thunder a little.
Murder, you know. It kind of struck me like, what's this stuff about murder stuck in here?
Yeah, but did you, do you get it better now? So Marilyn's teaching the rest of this. Go ahead.
That's great.
Yeah, that's good. You nailed it. I'm glad. I'm glad that you see it.
Yeah.
And that's the goal. I wish we could spend more time in all of them, because it's so rich and such a blessing. But the goal is that people see this and read this and listen to this, and then they go and they dive in on their own. Because, I mean, really, meet with God in your own quiet time. Build a study in your church and look at these things. Because, like I said before, once you see them, you can't unsee them. And it's actually not that difficult to facilitate a conversation about this. You don't have to be a Bible scholar to be like, let's just sit down and all talk about the covenants. You could spend a year with your local group talking about the covenants, and just like, it's like a little Easter egg hunt. Find where these things show up. It's kind of fun. I mean, I guess if you're a nerd. Okay. Kathy gets it. Okay. The next one is the Abrahamic covenant, and that appears in Genesis 12. You got a shorter passage.
I know.
And the reason I had Carol include all, even though some people would say the actual covenant part of Noahic was a little shorter, I thought it was important to include all of it, all of the beast situation. Also, because when God says a whole thing, far be it from me to cut him off and be like, oh, we're only going to look at this part, because he said a whole thing there. So
notes are.
Yeah, so he should be the boss of how much of that we include. And so go ahead, Kathy, if you would read Genesis 12, verses 1 to 3.
Now the Lord said to Abram, go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house to the land which I will show you, and I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great. And so you shall be a blessing, and I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you I will curse, and in you all the families of the earth will be blessed.
Okay. A shorter, but maybe what more well-defined. Maybe, do you guys see what I was mentioning before, that it actually, the lens, the focus becomes a little bit tighter on land, descendants, and relationship here? So would you pull out the trifold theme? Do you feel ready to do that? Or we can do it as a group?
Yeah, we'll say we can certainly do it as a group. Yeah, I mean, so he's going to make his name great. So I put that as family and relationships. He's going to bless the family. You, all the families of the earth will be blessed. Mm-hmm. So he's going to bless his family. So there's your relationship. It says, go to the land, which I will show you. So there he's got his land. And I will bless you. So there's his relationship. I mean, I will make your name great. So he's like making this promise to Abram that I'm going to be doing this for you.
Yes.
And so I've connected that relationship
to
you and to
your descendants,
your seed that comes down from under you. And so.
Great. Anything to add?
I just thought also he says, I will curse those who curse you. So he's protecting.
Right.
Yeah. So there's a protection.
So a special relationship.
To it.
You're set apart. You're special. Right. Very good. Okay, one of the things I didn't put in the homework, but I did want to just quickly mention here, as we read through any biblical passage, it's really helpful to pay attention when God slows down time. Another way that I can describe this is what I said earlier about the amount of like real estate it takes up on the page or in the book. So a lot of times real estate is a parallel I do a lot, because I always talk about, I know the neighborhood, but I don't always know the address. Like, I could be like, I'm pretty sure that's in First John, but I don't know the address. So that, for me, that's in. So I guess neighborhood, real estate, and that's about land. Anyway, okay. That just occurred to me. So what I just wanted to quickly say here is, when you think about Genesis 1 to 11, that's called the primeval history. And it covers a lot of chronology. But God slows it down at Noah, right? We learn a lot about the dimensions of the ark, the building of the ark. So when you think about how much real estate is taken up with the Noah narrative versus how much real estate was taken up with all the generations that occurred before him. And I said to you the other day, when you see a toledot or a genealogy, usually right after that is a moment. Because what God is doing is he's saying, here's a whole bunch of generations that led up to a moment I'd like you to see clearly. And so this, I'm just using this as a mechanism. I just want to give it as a tool that when you see a whole bunch of time happen and then time slow down, pay attention. I mean, we naturally do that because these are the stories we gravitate to, Noah, Abraham, Joseph. But I also want you to see it, how it works in the narrative. There's a kind of a formula there. And I don't know if you ever noticed it, again, because so much of us silo these stories. We don't pay a lot of attention to what happened before or after, even whether it be in the historical narrative or in the biblical text. But I just wanted to kind of give you that as a tool, especially for those of us who like to try every once in a while, I read the whole Bible in a year situation. So when you feel like, oh my God, these genealogies, just kind of think about them in a way that, oh, something good's about to happen. So think about it that way as you try to slog through the stuff that maybe, like, I don't want to say anything bad about numbers, but let's be honest, that's a little rough. So, I mean, but also if you think about Chronicles and Kings, there's a lot in there too. So I just want to kind of give you a formula for how do I receive these chronologies, these genealogies, and how do I kind of get through them? And I guess what I'm saying is in an anticipatory way, because there's a reason they're in there. And typically they are placed right before something that's kind of cool or something that we're supposed to pay attention to. It's in the case of Kings, like, and then this guy really messed it up, you know, so pay attention to that. So that was just a little tool I wanted to give. I hadn't done that in the homework, but I thought I'd give it to you in this moment. Okay, and so what's the let me ask you, what's the natural outcropping of why God would do that? I kind of just said it, but would you rephrase it? Why would God slow down the narrative and focus on something? Don't overthink it.
So we would pay attention.
Thank you. Okay.
Or there's something about that event in history, that person's life, that is useful to us for our salvation or our understanding of God.
Yeah.
Or so, you know, not that those hundreds of years covered by those previous generations, I mean, God did tons of stuff in their lives too, mm-hmm. but for some reason those stories weren't useful to God to slow down and say, let me tell you about, you know, this mm-hmm. one mm-hmm. person in this mm-hmm. line of genealogy. But that person lived, you know, for 900 years. Stuff happened, you know, but it wasn't useful for our salvation to know that story for
yeah.
whatever reason.
And if you're not sure which ones to look at, the writer of Hebrews did a great job giving us a quick recap in Hebrews 11.
But
some people call
useful.
That
I mean the whole the old
yeah, but
is
the Hebrews 11. Some people call the Hall of Faith.
The Hall of
yeah.
Faith.
Yeah, right. And it's the author kind of is like. Like, I don't know, it's the cliff notes, I guess,
right,
a little
right.
bit. So if you'd like a shortcut into where God slows things down, that's a good place to go. Okay, so I did some work in the homework, but what I'd like to do is give you guys an opportunity to tell me the examples you find in Genesis and your notes about the theme from Genesis. I did in the homework, and again, you can find that at studywithfriends.org. I did a lot of verses, but certainly not an exhaustive listing of the verses where land relationship and descendants appear. But I did what I hope was enough so that you could see it was definitely a theme through Genesis. So I'm actually more curious about which one struck you, and I'd love you to share those.
I didn't go through a lot, but
that's all right.
I did come up with one in Genesis 48, and this is Jacob on his deathbed, basically blessing his sons. Mm-hmm. And Jacob said to Joseph, God Almighty appeared to me at Luz in the land of Canaan, and he blessed me and said to me, I am going to make you fruitful and will increase your numbers. I will make you a community of peoples, and I will give this land as an everlasting possession to your descendants. So here again, it's God has a relationship mm-hmm, with Jacob. Mm-hmm. He's promising a land. He's promised descendants, and Joseph is Jacob is passing this on to his sons, mm-hmm. reminding them of this covenant, mm-hmm. this promise, mm-hmm.
which originated way before any of them. But right. So that's a great. Actually, I'm really glad that you mentioned that, because it reminds us how important it is for us to tell our children what God promises us. That's really good. How that's about you guys? Good.
I don't have another specific example.
That's all right.
I don't either, but I was thinking, because I shouldn't say I don't have another, but I wasn't going specifically covenant-ish, but I was looking at Joseph and how Joseph was essentially given Egypt to, I mean, it wasn't his land, it wasn't eventually the homeland, but it was, he blessed everywhere Joseph went. And my husband and I were talking about it not long ago, and that's what made me think of it, is they weren't saying, like, Joseph, I bless you. It was like they blessed everyone around Joseph. Mm-hmm. You know, when he was in jail, everyone around Joseph in jail was blessed. And so I was just looking at how his promise worked through that way in the land and in his relationships, yes. even with people.
And Joseph is a descendant.
And he's a descendant. Mm-hmm. That's and great. So just, yep. that was the
word. That's great. Ones. Yeah, and again, really, it's kind of upside down that we're not doing a ton in the text, but the idea is to help you see these covenant themes, and then you go in and you... I mean, it's like a little Easter egg hunt, like I said. Okay. So any questions about Genesis? Anything that you're like, wait a minute. Okay, good. Let's just do our movement into Exodus. Movement. I use that word on purpose. Ha, ha, ha. Okay. So when you think of Exodus, what do you think, before we go into the specific texts, you know, What do you think about when you think of Exodus? Don't overthink it. It's the title.
Yeah.
Right. Talk to me about what does Exodus mean?
The children of Israel leaving Egypt.
Okay. So at its core, it's a story about?
Land.
The children of Israel. So that's descendants. Leaving one land and going into another and experiencing a relationship with God that was very special and unique. So set apart before they left Egypt. With all the plagues, and like God was like, let my people go. So if there's any doubt that Exodus is carrying on the theme of land, descendants, and relationship, I hope we've dispelled that. Okay, so, and I wanted to in the homework, not gloss by the watershed moment at the bush, the burning bush, because that is a really important act of intimacy that God offers and graces Moses to. And I won't get too deep into the revelation of his name in that moment, but when he says, I am, and then they begin to call him, I am, but that was an intimacy that he's foreshadowing, and he's going to ask Moses to mediate with Israel in the years to come. And that moment of revealing just a little bit more of who he is. When you think about the intimacy that you experience when you're reading the Bible or learning the Bible, and you feel that closeness with God, I almost really don't know how to describe that, but that intimacy when he just shows you another tiny piece of who he is. Does that make sense what I'm saying to you? Yeah. Have you experienced that? Mm-hmm. And so I don't want to rush past the moment where God shows Moses a little bit more of who he is. And he gives Moses, I mean, of course, he had an extra special relationship with Moses, as we see all throughout. But that moment where he's at the bush and he gives him the name, I just didn't want to rush by it because it's an intimacy experience. It it foreshadows the very special relationship this nation is about to have. Don't we sometimes, when we talk about Israel, and sometimes we dog out Israel because we're like, man, they really screwed a lot up. But if we're ever jealous of something, it's that intimacy they experienced with God in the wilderness and how he was so close with them and so present with them. And I don't know about you, but that's something that I feel like, wow, what was that like? Yeah.
Well, enough that it scared them. They didn't want to talk. Right. They want to hear God talk.
Genesis 19. Exodus 19. Yeah, that was a super scary super scary moment for them, 19 and 20. Oh, that's great, yeah. So, but that's actually, don't we want to always be in awe? It's a little bit, the fear of the Lord.
So, Holly, this is the very first time that the Lord reveals his name to ever in all of. So what did Abraham? He just didn't have a name.
He would just say, my Lord. I mean, he was aware. He was aware.
Yeah, but didn't know the name. Didn't have a name.
Okay. No name. That's why
the name.
That's why they didn't ever want. Yeah. Like, there was a special relationship with name and the Hebrews. They didn't want to say it out loud. And so it's, again, that's a whole study about the names of God and when he revealed. But, yeah, that was the first moment where he said, because Moses asked him. And because Moses said, when they ask me who I sent them, who should I say? Mm-hmm. And then God, in some ways, it feels like a little bit of a smackdown. I am who I am. You just go do what I said. But it's actually him saying, I am.
Yeah.
And I wish we had all day. Mm-hmm. But what he's really saying there is, I am everything.
Yeah, sufficient. Totally.
Right? Yeah. So.
It's not that I was.
I am. Mm-hmm.
It's the aspect of just being was there from.
Always. Yeah.
Always and always will be.
Yeah. So maybe in some ways we've looked at that passage and said that seems like he just still didn't give them a name, but he did. He did. And he gave Moses a new element, a new way to think about him.
I was going to say, it's more than just a name. Mm-hmm. As you're saying, it's more than just a name. Mm-hmm. It's I am, because when you were talking about Thursday, the Smackdown with Job, right? It's like that. Like, it's this I am,
Let me just show you for a second how gigantic I am.
Right. Because you can go say the Lord, right? But I am, and that encompasses just everything. Yeah. And that would be a really powerful moment.
Yes. Yeah, and I didn't want to skirt by it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, again, it foreshadows the intimacy, and that does reflect special relationship that we're trying to lift out.
I'm so glad we're going through the Old Testament and getting a chance to see how all of those books point us to Jesus and also how they really are so applicable to our lives today. We are a weekly Bible study like you will find in your local church. If you aren't involved in a study, we encourage you to find one. Make sure that they're teaching from the Bible in every situation. In Matthew 10, Jesus sent out his disciples to preach the word, saying, "Freely you have received, freely give." We take that command seriously here at Study with Friends, so we have created many resources for you to use, all at our website, studywithfriends.org. There you will find other studies, blog posts, and daily encouragement to help you in your walk with Christ. Just like those disciples who relied on the generosity of a host, we are also 100% donor-supported. So if you are particularly blessed by one of the resources we work hard to provide, please consider a donation of any amount. A monthly partnership is especially helpful, and no amount is too small. If you are happy to give it, we would be grateful and blessed to receive it. You can donate one time or become a monthly partner on our website, studywithfriends.org/donate. We also love to hear from you via email at info@studywithfriends.org. You can also connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And be sure to check us out on YouTube. And remember, you can always stream us on the go on your favorite streaming apps like iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher. Thanks again for joining us. We'll see you next time when we study with friends.